Today we're talking with Bronwyn Nash as she takes us on her journey from corporate to campervans to coaching supervisor and trainer, as she shares with us her visualizations, her creativity and her values. So welcome to the podcast, Bronwyn. It's great to have you here.
Thanks very much.
So I suppose it'd be great to start at the beginning, just think about what brought you to coaching in the first place?
Yeah, okay. So I'm an ex-HR person who's become a coach. So one of them. There's quite a few of us about. So I had a corporate career in human resources, financial services and the healthcare sector. And that got increasingly more corporate as I went throughout my career. And I got to a place where I just was feeling a lot of discomfort, which I now recognise was me showing up in a way that I felt I should show up, trying to be, do and have things that I thought I should.
Rather than
the things I actually wanted. And that was the discomfort that I was feeling. I didn't recognise that at the time.
That's interesting, because a lot of HR people that come into Animus or corporate people that come into the training often feel that thing of, oh, I've been doing this job for ages, but it isn't really me.
Yeah.
And they're not quite sure what they're looking for or who they want to be.
Yeah, and that was really reassuring when I found that out, because at the time I was like, it's just me. I'm the only one who's feeling this. So I started looking for a coach. I didn't know that life coaching existed. I knew about corporate coaching, and I thought, oh, this must exist outside, where you can just buy it for yourself. So I started Googling coaching, and very quickly what came up in my search was training to become a coach. And it wasn't marketing of Animus's, it was another coaching school.
Okay.
And I just got diverted by that really quickly. And the more I read about it, the more I recognised things that actually I was really passionate about, and I am really passionate about. It was really interesting because they were the same things that led me into HR.
Oh.
But I ended up not doing those things.
So what were those things?
It was about being able to make a difference. It sounds really cliche, doesn't it? Oh, I just want to make a difference. It was about making a difference, but it was making a positive, tangible difference to people and
right.
to people's lives. And that was what I felt when I first went into human resources. And that saw me acting more like a union rep to begin with than a HR person. Yeah, so it really spoke to me, and it really resonated with me, and I thought I could pay some money to have 6 sessions with a coach and work through this little bit of what I'm going through.
Mm.
But that stopped feeling like what I want to do. What I want to actually do is invest in learning to become a coach myself, because I felt that was going to take me on a journey that was going to take me somewhere really valuable. And the worst case scenario was that it was going to make me better at the job that I was already doing.
Okay.
And open up new facets of that career that I wasn't seeing at the moment. That was like the worst case scenario. So I did that. I started my coaching training with Animus. I chose Animus because it didn't feel like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the places I investigated, I felt like I was just going to be put on this conveyor belt and I was going to pop out the other end. And I was like, I was already feeling this desire to be more authentic, and that resonated much more with Animus's style. And then I read through my Animus training week, back in the day when we had to do book reviews. Do you remember that?
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, instead of a case study. So I was looking around about what I wanted to do my book review on and reading other people's book reviews, and I found out about this book called Fuck It Therapy by John C. Parkin.
Okay, yep.
And I read it. It really resonated with me, and I read it, and it the fundamental messages are it's about becoming conscious of what's going on for you, and then being able to either say fuck it and let go of things that aren't serving you, or harness that energy in its much more kind of like energized form to really go for something that means something to you. Reading that book gave me the awareness to realise that I just didn't want to be in my career anymore. So I had this kind of, I had my own fuck it moment in my mum's garden on an August bank holiday down in Devon, where I was just like, this is my life, this is my actual one and only life. Why am I using it to do stuff that I don't want to do, that makes me feel in a way that I don't want to feel? So that was that, really. The decision was made and it was just done.
In that moment in the garden,
this kind of just like, oh, moment of clarity. And then it was just a case of just making it happen. So what I created for myself was 3 months. I had a budget that could keep me going for 3 months whilst I played and experimented and really just gave myself permission to just be with whatever was going on and explore what I might want. So I used that time to complete my diploma, and I decided to, as a kind of a focal point for my attention, to create a coaching practice. Not because I particularly knew that that was what I wanted, or even that I was really clear that I wanted to be a coach at that time, but for me it was about an experiment in authenticity. It was a vehicle for me to show up in the most authentic way possible.
That's really interesting. So I love that, the idea of it being an experiment. It's one of the things that David Drake talks about in the coaching session, to try things out as experiments. And that way they're not fixed to anything, but it's just an idea and we can play with it. And there's no sort of, it has to work because it's an experiment.
Yeah, we're allowed to flirt with our ideas. We don't have to marry them.
Flirt with our ideas. Lovely, lovely.
That's not my quote, I have to confess.
Where's that? Who's that from?
I don't know, actually. Okay. It came to me through a friend who went to see a seminar or a talk, and she came back with that one, and I loved it.
Float with our ideas.
Yeah.
Lovely.
We don't have to marry them. So I didn't have any budget to put towards creating a business. It was all just a bit of a vehicle to explore my own, who am I? I felt like I'd really lost my sense of who I was, and wasn't even sure if I'd even had it that clearly. So that was my mission. So I created, I dared myself to be as authentic as I possibly could. So I created my website. I came up with a name for my business, which was, again, it was a really interesting process because I went through all the kind of the conventional type of coaching names, and all the domain names had gone.
Okay.
And again, just had a conversation with my husband in the kitchen going, I just can't let go of this one idea that keeps popping up for me of magic roundabout coaching. But nah, you know, and he said, it's brilliant, do it, just go for it. And because it was an experiment, I didn't feel I had to wrestle with all the what ifs. It was just like, yeah, why not? Let's just see what happens. I didn't have any budget, and I was thinking, well, what do I have? I didn't want to pay out loads of money for a coaching space, and I had a VW camper van. So I thought, great, well, let's use that as the coaching space. It's quirky, it's different, it's creative. It's a space that very few people have got any experience or existing connotations around being in. It means that I'm not seeing clients in my home, but also I'm not seeing them in their home, which I was quite clear that I didn't want to do at the time. But I'm not paying out for hire of spaces or trying to coach in cafes.
So what's the caravan, the camper van called?
The camper van is called Zebedee. So that was kind of the inspiration behind the name Magic Roundabout Coaching. So yeah, Magic Roundabout coaching in the camper van that's called Zebedee. And it meant that it started to create a very quirky, unique, creative sort of feel, which I really kind of ran with. So, you know, it was all about turning that into a bit of a USP. And saying, you know, you might think of coaching as two armchairs, magnolia room, pot plant. And as the client, you might be expecting me to tell you where to come for the coaching session. but straight away I'm going to start putting that ownership onto you. Where do you want to have the coaching session?
Yeah.
We can have it anywhere. Do you want to be by the woods, by the river, by the sea?
Yeah.
I have to coach someone in Tesco's car park because that was convenient for them. It worked for them. It was just such fun to straight away start putting the ownership in my clients' hands.
That's brilliant.
This is your journey. Literally, this is your journey.
Yeah,
let's get in a camper van
and go on a journey. And I think I remember seeing pictures of the camper van in different places, but also looking out of the doors and the different sort of vistas that you would have.
Yeah, and it creates a really lovely feeling of being safe and private and confidential, but also free and outdoors, and there's that kind of feeling of just being out in nature. And yeah, it created a really lovely set of conditions.
Lovely.
Inadvertently.
So you'd gone from working in HR, recognising that wasn't really who you were, looking for a coach, finding coaching training, becoming a coach, setting up Magic Roundabout. So what happens next for you in that story, in that journey?
So what happened next was I realised after a while that I'd created a coaching practice. I'd created a coaching business. I still wasn't calling it a business because that was a bit scary. It was an experiment, it was a hobby, it was a project. But effectively what I'd created was a pretty successful part-time coaching practice. So I kind of woke up and realised that one day and realised that my 3 months had kind of passed some time ago and that this was actually working. So that has been kind of ticking over, I would say. I really front-loaded it with learning and development. I did the Animist Diploma. I then did every single CPD that was on offer. I just booked them all. I was just like, bring it on, really just full immersion. And then I feel like I kind of went off into the wilderness a little bit and started just putting it all into practice and playing with it all and seeing what happened. So I did that for about 3 years.
And so who were you working with at this time? So who were the clients that were coming to you?
As I now recognise is very common, and it was flagged to me that this could and probably would happen while I was training, I started attracting clients that really reflected my journey and where I'd been up to. So I'd been in this place of trying to be, do and have what I felt I should be, do and have, and finding that was coming into conflict with how I wanted or what I wanted to be, do and have.
Yeah.
And that's what I started attracting in terms of my clients. So I've worked with men and women from 20s through to 70s, all ages and stages, but that tended to be the common theme, is that they were starting to feel... I talk about sometimes like the thumb screws getting tighter and tighter of, this is uncomfortable, I don't like it, this is uncomfortable, there's just something about this. On paper, I should be happy. I should be having this great experience. I've done all the things I should have.
Yeah.
And this word just keeps it like coming up like this horrible kind of, ugh. And so I was working with people who'd either already realised that or they were feeling it but hadn't worked out why. So it was about figuring out what they did want,
yeah,
bringing it to their kind of conscious awareness of all this should that was going on, and having kind of become conscious of it, starting to think about what might they want to do in order to create the experience that they want to have.
So did you have a particular process that created that or that generated that awareness with them?
Not to begin with. I was really experimenting with all kinds of different things, but one did emerge, and I found that I was often doing a lot of the same stuff with a lot of my clients. So I kind of developed a bit of a sort of a signature move that I now kind of package and offer to people as a standalone session, and it's obviously optional whether my clients want to start there. They might want to just start with a much more general exploration and just see where we get to. But when I talk about it with potential new clients, it often really resonates with them. And what it involves is using a variety of creative processes like images and mind maps and visualization and various different things to get clear around where are they now and how does it feel? What are their core values? What are their needs that are potentially not being met?
Yeah.
And we're working very much with who is this person in the room right now, not 6 months ago or six years ago or the last time they thought about it. And then finally, how do they want to feel? And there's this just beautiful process of just allowing ourselves to just consider if we had 1,000 wishes and there were no rules, except you're not allowed to wish for more wishes because that's cheating.
You read my mind.
I know, everyone goes there. What would you wish for? And really encourage people to just go crazy, get into their like 5-year-old.
Yeah.
I'd wish for like sparkly rainbows to fall out of the sky when I press the sparkly rainbow button, as well as all the serious stuff as well. But just really allow them to just free their minds up and think about if they could change time, space, history, anything. If all those wishes were granted, how would they feel?
This is really interesting. Some of the work that I will do with clients around who they're being and how they're showing up is kind of rooted in that. As you know, if you could be whoever, who would you be? Yeah. You know, who is that you inside that you're hiding or you're afraid to show in the world? And how do you get that out into the space?
Because it's not about what they wish for. It's really about how they want to feel.
Yeah,
and it's just a way of accessing that without it getting all cognitive.
So did these sort of creative processes, is that part of your history?
I think it's probably a part of me that I've suppressed throughout school, throughout choices in terms of what subjects to study, in terms of my career. I think it's always been there and I've kind of gone like this with it and now I'm allowing it to come out a lot more than I ever have.
So as well as creating a space for your clients to be who they want to be, you're allowing yourself to be who you want to be.
Yes, definitely. Oh yeah, there's definitely this duality of journeys. And I really recognise now that I me as a student and me as a teacher is the same me. And it's the same journey, which takes a lot of the pressure away.
Mm.
Because all I need to do is just keep learning and keep allowing that stuff to show up in my work.
And so how did you go from running your practice? So was it full-time, part-time?
No, it was very much part-time. I was really clear when I left full-time employment that there was nothing that I wanted to do. Every time I thought about something that I really wanted to do, the thought of doing it to the exclusion of everything else was a real turn-off. I was like, oh, I don't want to do it if it means I have to do it to the exclusion of everything else. So I was really clear that I wanted to create like a bit of a buffet for myself. So my practice was only ever intended to be part-time, so that's what I created. And then it gave me the opportunity to do all the other things that I wanted to do as well as that.
And what are these other things?
So to begin with, it was about a lot of workshops, retreats, experiences.
So is that going on workshops, running workshops?
It was going on them to begin with. And then it's kind of started phasing into doing different types of work. So I created a group for women in Colchester just over a year ago, which is like a personal development program and tribe building thing, experiment. which has been a place where I've cut my teeth really in terms of getting visible and showing up and holding space for groups and being a bit of a trainer but also a facilitator, and it's turned into a place where I can experiment with stuff as well. So it's turned into a bit of a lab.
Nice.
For me, as well as creating tribe, which I've recognised now as being really important. I've always kind of been a bit of a loner in terms of what I do, and now I'm much more interested in exploring collaborating and working with and alongside and that kind of being one of many type place.
Mm.
So what that's kind of transformed into now is I've still got my coaching practice, my part-time coaching practice. I'm working with Animas as a trainer now since the back half of last year. I've got my group for women. I've got a developing supervision practice, which is really exciting. And I've started collaborating with colleagues on workshops and retreats, so starting to hold that space, so starting to pay back or pay forward what I've gained from those experiences and creating those spaces and experiences for other people as well. So my next workshop is this weekend coming. And that's a collaboration of movement and meditation and creative, intuitive vision boarding.
Yeah. Mouthful.
Yeah.
So it feels there are some sort of circles taking place in that, sort of, you know, becoming a coach or training to become a coach, and now you're training coaches, supervising coaches, running workshops. It feels like there's lots of little loops.
The circle
taking
of
place.
Life. The music from The Lion King.
What is it like being part of that, being part of setting up other people's coaching experience and their coaching journeys?
It's a real privilege. It was really weird to begin with to remember what it was like to be. Because I train the cognitions module at the moment, which is the second module in the diploma.
Yeah.
And really feeling into remembering what that was like to be right at the beginning of my journey and where I was up to and what I knew and what I didn't know and what I thought I knew, and then meeting coaches in training where they are at that point and seeing the growth and the excitement and the development and the light bulb moments and the moments of clarity and the moments when a particular approach really works or really doesn't, you know, and all the learning that comes from that. It's an absolute delight, a real pleasure. And I'm also noticing that the duality is still going on there. So as well as bringing and holding that experience for others, it's deepening my own understanding of this stuff for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm still having light bulb moments of my own in the training room.
There's something so interesting about training coaches where you just learn so much in the training process. You kind of go, oh, that connects to that. Yeah. I hadn't seen that before. It's like, how could I have not noticed it?
Yeah. So now you've said that, I'm almost wondering how much you could learn just by going over the same material with different groups of people. And just, you know, it for me, it's previously been about kind of getting this breadth of knowledge and this breadth of understanding. But what's happening now is in certain areas, it's now becoming a lot of depth.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder what would happen if we just covered the same stuff with different groups of people and just all the learning and the deepening of understanding and joining the dots together.
Because I also think the different people create different learning as well. So they kind of trigger new thoughts, new ideas by their questions or their energy in the space.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about facilitating these experiences with coaches in training is that I don't feel like I'm showing up as a teacher in the space. I feel like I'm turning up as a facilitator and sometimes a trainer because I have information and I have knowledge and tools and so forth to impart. But then it's about showing up. We're all showing up in that space as coaches. And that can create something very unique and very different and really rich every single time.
Yeah, I love when training that it's not just about giving information, it's about coaching that information and then going, what do we want to do with this? And how do we experiment with it? How do we play with these ideas? Because they're just ideas.
And it's really interesting because when I was asked which of the modules I'd like to begin with in terms of re-engaging with and starting to train, the one that came up for me was cognitions. And I have been and can be very cognitive, and that served me and has really not served me in the past. And one of the things I really value about the experience of that module and delivering that material is it really gives coaches a huge amount of it gives them a lot of tools to put in their toolkit that will help when they're working with cognitive blocks or cognitive overwhelm or obstacles or repetitive patterns, you know, all this stuff that's so useful when they're working with clients who can get themselves into those pickles. Because I can too.
Yeah.
I love it from that perspective, but also I find that coaches in training can come into that module with quite a lot of perceived pressure about getting it right as a coach and how to do coaching and the right way to do, and they're getting all cognitive themselves. They're getting all caught up in their thinking and getting all stuck and overwhelmed and bogged down. So at the same time as delivering all these tools and all this information, my desire is to alleviate a lot of this pressure, a lot of this weight that I observe people bringing into the training ring by encouraging the experimenting mindset of it's okay to just play with this stuff. And I use the analogy of the crystal maze quite a lot. It's, you know, these models are not like, you know, once you're in the crystal maze, you have to go through every single part of it, get the crystal before you're allowed to get out. They're like playgrounds.
Yeah.
They're like adventure playgrounds, and you're in this playground and you can go and play on the swings and you can go and play on the slide. And then you can go back to the swings if you want to. There's no set order and you don't have to do it all.
Because I think as new coaches, we do get caught up in getting it right, getting coaching right, as opposed to finding our own way of coaching and feeling our way through the different models and ways of working.
Yes, yeah. And also I observe a lot of coaches in training coming into that module still wanting to do a lot of the work for the client. You know, and that creates a lot of weight and that creates a lot of pressure of like, I need to join up the dots for my client, and then find a way to get them to see what I've figured out for them.
I guess that in those early days, we're still doing, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're still doing a lot of the doing, sort of being with our clients. We're doing to our clients. It just takes a while to get into that. So how can I be with my client as opposed to do to my client?
Yeah. So there's this mantra that I've kind of stolen from the ICF, and I'm using it in my coaching training a lot now, but I'm also using it to remind myself, because it's just the clearest, simplest way that I've found of getting this across and reminding myself of this, which is the client is creative, resourceful and whole.
Yeah.
And so are we.
And we can forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I still do forget it sometimes, and that's okay, but it's really nice to have this place to come back to of, my client is creative, resourceful and whole. All I need to do is facilitate them to access their creativity, to access their resourcefulness. It's going to be so much better than anything that I could, you know, consultatively kind of create for them and present to them as a solution.
Lovely.
And they're whole. They don't need fixing.
And, you know, I think sometimes we get caught up in that, you know, somebody's a bit broken and I'm going to do something to make them okay.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that can come from a really good place as well, of wanting to help people, but sort of forgetting or not recognising that when we allow people to help themselves, there's so much more weight and growth within that. So I also know you're doing supervision. Mm. And I'm just curious about how does being a supervisor impact on your coaching?
It's taking it. I wouldn't say it's taken it yet. It's happening at the moment. It's taking it to a whole new level. Being able to start to show up as a supervisor to other coaches, it almost creates a similar experience to the one we've just discussed about it, that happens in the training room, where we learn from each other. And by working in that very collaborative way as two coaches, it can create an incredible richness and learning for both parties, has been my experience so far. So I feel that it's developing my coaching practice just by osmosis, without me having to do too much about it. What's really exciting about moving into the supervision space is that with so many people becoming aware of coaching as an option, and so many people starting to move into coaching as a profession, there is a real need and place out there, a growing need and a growing place for good supervision. And that's for all. That didn't really land with me fully until I started training as a supervisor myself. The value of it for coaches straight out of training right through to really, really experienced and super qualified coaches. So what I love about that is the ripple effect that I can have as a supervisor. So if I'm a coach working with individual clients, the ripple effect will be everyone whose life touches that client's life to some extent.
Yeah.
If I'm working with coaches, those coaches are each coaching lots of different clients. And then everybody who is in each of those clients' world is going to be feeling some of that ripple effect. And I really love that, being able to work in that way and to have that ripple effect from the work that we're creating together.
It was one of the things that I really appreciated when I started training coaches. It's, you know, you work one-to-one and you have that effect, but when you start to train people that work with those, that there's a bigger effect that you're part of.
Yes.
So we talked a lot about sort of what you're doing and the experiments and how they work. So I'm just curious, were there any challenges along the way with that?
Right here, right now, one of my biggest challenges is managing all the different things that I'm doing at the moment. And I created a vision board at the beginning of the year, quite intuitively, not really having a clear idea of what the future looked like, but wanting to just kind of intuitively feel into what some of the key ingredients might be. And this lovely picture of a paint box came up. It really resonated with me and attracted me, and I wasn't quite sure why. So it had all these lovely different colours, but the colours are kind of clearly defined and separated by the white plastic container that they're in. And I realised that was a metaphor for time and energy and attention management, right? So these colours for me represent all the different vibrant, exciting things that I've got going on in my world at the moment. But without those boundaries of the paint box, they all run together into a mucky brown mess. I don't enjoy that. Really don't enjoy that. That has happened a few times where it's all just kind of like everything's run into everything else, and I start feeling overwhelmed and don't know where to start or what to focus on. That's been one of my biggest kind of learnings and biggest challenges is what do those boundaries look like, and to what extent do they need to be in place and held firmly in order to create the experience that I want to have, which is for these pockets of rich, vibrant colour. And, you know, the metaphor works really well because some of those colours are complementary. It's okay for them to run into each other. It creates something really lovely.
Mm.
But when they all run into each other, it gets...
So is there anything specific that you do to help yourself with keeping those boundaries?
So what I did is I found people who were really good at doing it, and I asked them how they did it, and I kind of collected what works for other people, and out of that I took what I felt resonated for me. So it was things like getting really clear about what's the white space that I need in my schedule, in my diary. What's the times that are just specifically for me, or for me and my husband, or for family time? So Friday evenings, for example, have become protected time, because it's the end of the week. Me and my husband Tim, we both had a lot going on. We're both tired, so we've created that space, and that's kind of sacrosanct space now. And Sundays, if I'm not training, then Sundays are kind of the same. So right. I kind of put those. And also, what's my time off? So when are my holidays? When are my the things that I really want to, the experiences I want to happen? And for me, that's often festivals, camping, solo retreats, reflective space, visiting friends, those sorts of things. So getting those into the diary rather than just thinking, oh, I must get around to that. That's been really powerful.
Because it's really easy to forget that stuff. Yeah. It's really easy to get caught up in all the different colours and forget the rest of life.
Yes. And then before I know it, I've fallen off a cliff, energetic, with my energy levels. Right. Some of the other things that have been really key is picking particular slots in my diary, particular times and particular days when I'm available to see clients. Because previously we were just figuring out, when are you available, when am I available, right, let's get it in. So having clear slots so that I know that on these days at these times, that's when I'm available to see clients. To clump like things together. So rather than to be doing a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of something else, to find things that are similar and put them together in my schedule, in my diary, in my planner. And to only make a maximum of 3 commitments per day.
Nice.
That's been really powerful as well. And remembering that everything takes longer than I think it's going to.
That's one of my challenges.
Right? So overestimating how much I can get done in a day. But also, there's this weird paradox that I underestimate how much I can get done in bigger amounts of time. So, like a year, I will underestimate how much I can achieve in a year, but overestimate how much I can get done in a day.
It's really interesting how time works like that. And it sort of, as I think about this, it sort of makes me think, at the beginning of our conversation, you spoke about how Animus was different and cool to you, and I'm just curious about what was that difference?
It was giving me, as a coach in training, giving me access to lots of different ways of showing up as a coach without the school being attached to any one version of that. And the encouragement that I would take that learning and put it into practice in a way that was uniquely mine, so that what Animas was creating was a pool of very unique, very individual coaches. And the impression that I got from some of the other schools that I looked at that were offering something that felt like a comparable level of qualification at a comparable cost was that it felt much more like, as I mentioned earlier, like a bit of a conveyor belt.
Yeah, that kind of cookie cutter thing.
Yeah. And that if you didn't coach like this, then it didn't count. So that freedom, and as I mentioned, you know, I was really noticing how much I wanted to explore becoming a very authentic version of myself, and figuring out what that was and what that looked like. That then felt very compatible with where I was up to.
And with the sort of the growth and expansion of Animus, where do you fit into all of that?
I feel like my hair's kind of like one of those cartoons. It's crazy, isn't it? It's just kind of gone off the scale. The growth and the potential. So I feel like I've joined or rejoined Animas or re-engaged with Animas at a really perfect time, where there is this all these opportunities for growth and expansion in terms of the different schools that might be created, so that there's this there's a place where you can go and really focus on relationship coaching or group coaching or corporate coaching or training coaching, but also that that is, it's like the breadth and the depth is happening kind of concurrently.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's this these opportunities to kind of expand out into different parts of the world as well. And I'm just fascinated as to what that's going to look like with other cultures and other languages and, you know, to be part of all that emerging. It just feels, I mean, I've talked a lot about experimenting, haven't I, in our conversation, and it just feels like there's all these amazing experiments going on.
Yeah, totally.
And that feels really exciting. It feels like Nick talks a lot about wanting to be at the forefront of defining what coaching looks like in the future, and it feels like that's what's happening, and I'm absolutely in for the ride around that. I don't know what that's going to look like for me. I don't know what that's going to look like for me yet. And that's okay, because it just feels like it's going to be an emergent thing. Watch this space. Really exciting.
Indeed. So we know that you're an Animus trainer, so we can find you on the Animus website. But where else could people find Bronwyn?
Probably the best place to go is my website, which is www.magicroundaboutcoaching, all one word, .co.uk.
Magicroundaboutcoaching.co.uk.
Yes. But obviously I'm on Facebook, I'm on the Animus Lounge, I'm all over the place.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you today, Bronwyn. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.